It's Wednesday, January 14th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 132 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
And my name is Pat.
Pat, you're catching up on Chris. Turned 35. When was it, Monday?
It was yesterday, yes.
As I get older, one of the things that I have noticed is that, to me, the difference between generations isn't really changing. Because, like, I know a lot of people talk about how you're a kid, you're one way, and then you get older, and then you bitch about how kids are these days.
Yeah, with their damn rap music. Yeah. But in your generation, you know, is the damn rock music or whatever.
I recognize there's no change. I hated kids when I was a kid. I hated teenagers when I was a teenager. I hated college kids when I was a college kid. And as of today, I still hate teenagers and college kids. And if I'm not related to them, maybe kids as well. And so I recognize there's really no difference between the generations. We were just as dumb then as we are today. But one thing I have noticed, it gets harder and harder for me to tell how old anyone is. When I was a kid, I could usually pin somebody's age down to within a couple of years. Now, I'm lucky to hit within a decade.
You know, I find the same thing. And I will say, when I think back on when I was a kid, I believe that I actually was kind of dumb at that age as well. So I think I've gotten a little smarter as I've aged. But I, you know, I'm like you in that I always hated the young whippersnappers and whatever else like this. See, that's a word you start to use when you get to be my age,
whippersnappers.
Huh? I didn't use that word Sunday, but come Monday, it was sort of just like there.
It was weird. Came upon you.
Strange things happen Monday morning.
Anyway. I think some of it's perception as well. Like your boss, Chad, really threw me off.
Yeah, Wayne?
Yeah. I presume he was at least 10 years older than he is. And here's why. I don't think it's a comment on his appearance.
No.
It's because he's a boss. Yeah. Bosses have to be older than I am.
My boss is younger than me.
And therefore, he must be older than I am. Mm-hmm. Since bosses are always old people, relative to where I have been up to this point in my life.
The authority figure is aged.
Yes.
You know, I think it's very ingrained within our society.
Well, it's a head trip. I'm running to new cops that are younger than I am.
Yeah.
And I'm just so used to them being these adults.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's weird because there must be something about getting older that does that, because like you said, I used to be able to pinpoint people's ages better than I am now too. And because I'll look at people now, especially the kids that are younger than me, and particularly like the late high school and college age kids, I have no idea. And I the reason I'm around them a lot is because I have a 2-year-old son that's in daycare, and that's about the age of a lot of the girls that work there, basically college age girls that are in like childhood development and whatnot.
Are they hot?
Yeah, they actually are. But you know, I'll look at them and think, oh my God, she's got to be young. She can't be much more than like, you know, 15 or 16 years old. Turns out she's like 20.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of blows my mind.
Chad, there's a game you want to talk about, and we can only talk about it now because in true Fear the Boot fashion, it's recently gone out
That's
of print.
Right.
So this enables us to talk about it.
It's not a review. It is like history.
I saw this being demoed at Gen Con. This was 2007.
Did you see it with the big ships?
Oh, big ships, big, really detailed play area. Like, it wasn't just on a table. They had this really detailed modeler it was played within. And I didn't think too much of it. And I think that's because my taste in gaming has changed since then. I'm getting more into less RPG-ish sorts of games.
Strategy
games and board games. I'm not quite into collectible games yet just because I don't like the idea of collecting. Mm-hmm. But I still enjoy that kind of game more than I have before. But how did you get this game?
Okay, first we're talking about Pirates of the Cursed Sea.
Yeah, which is a WizKids game.
It's a WizKids game, and it's like a collectible card game, only you don't play cards like a hand. It's like these, I think they were called Z cards, or there's different names for it. Basically, imagine a credit card, something that's a piece of plastic the size of a credit card that's totally flat. And in it is die cast, punched out forms that you punch out. Like, say if it's a car, you'll have your wheels and you'll have the hood and you'll have the sides of the car, and you punch each of those out of the plastic card, and then they have fit tab A into slot B, and you kind of click it all together and you have a three-dimensional little plastic car. Well, my wife and I, Dawn, saw these years ago in Walmart, and we're like, oh my God, these are so cool, because they had tanks and planes and helicopters and cars, and they were like 50 cents. And since we were adults and these were for kids, you know, kids would be like, oh, I saved up and I got one. You know, it's like, yeah, we laid a $20 bill on the table and bought their entire stock. And actually, we ended up using the tanks and helicopters and stuff as battle tech.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, we didn't want to buy models of tanks. That's really boring. And we had these and these were only like pennies a piece, and so we use these as markers on war game maps. We use them for different things too, for tanks and helicopters and planes. Fast forward years and years later, I'm in a hobby shop and I see Pirates of the Cursed Sea, and it's basically they've taken this concept and turned it into a game, and it's pirate ships where it has the card. You buy a booster pack. It's all collectible. You don't know what you're getting, and how they package is really cool. One booster, this isn't a starter kit. They have starter kits, though. But in a booster pack is everything you need to play a game. Literally everything you need to play the game. You open it up, you have two ships, you have a captain or a piece of equipment, like a cannon or something like that, or a special kind of cannon. You have one island, you have coins, because that's like the you're supposed to like go to the islands and grab the coins and sail them back to your home base, and the other team blows you out of the water and they can board you and take the coins and that sort of thing. And instructions on how to play, quick instructions how to play, and I kid you not, a miniature D6 is in every single booster pack. So you could buy one booster pack, sit down and play. Now, it's not very balanced. It might not be the most exciting game because it's one ship on one ship, and you're supposed to play. They have point values. You're supposed to play to 40 points, one to five ships, I guess. And it's just really, really neat. And I don't know how I got into it, because my boss at work, Wayne, the guy we were just talking about, he plays it. Him and his wife saw it somewhere and they picked up a bunch of copies, and then they just did it something that they could play together. And I forget if I was mentioning it to him or we were talking about it or he brought it up. I forget what the story was. I'm sure he'll remind me when he listens to this. But he had it and he bought a booster and he gave it to me because I was talking about it. And I opened it up and I'm like, oh my God, I love this. I haven't even played it yet. Literally, I'm putting the ships together and I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. It's a collectible miniatures game that you
ships reflect the damage. Yeah. Like if you shoot a cannon, knock a mass off, because it's just a little fit together piece, you just remove the mass.
There's even equipment you can get called like a firebomb. And the firebomb,
and you take out a cigarette lighter and you burn your ship.
No. It's a big lighter. So, it's awesome.
So yeah, when you fire a cannon at the ship, like an enemy ship, I roll the dice, I hit, I score, I reach over to your ship and I pull a mast off, and you take damage, and then that is reflected. You can't shoot your cannons as much. It's weird. Cannons are reflected in mass. It's not movement.
Okay. But fair enough.
It's simple. Simple rules, right? It would be too complex if they did it mass.
Well, and also, I guess the net result in that Age of Combat of maneuvering was to bring your cannons to bear. So, okay, I can understand where they're going with that.
Yeah, and they probably blasted some crew members off deck, and it represents other damage.
Right.
So, okay. So, with firebombs, they have an additional effect. I think they do damage over time, that sort of thing. But anyway, you take the mast off and then you replace it with another piece that is fire and smoke. And so you have this ship that is on fire and smoking and stuff.
Yeah, if I remember right, when I saw this at Gen Con 07, they had a really big table.
Mm-hmm.
And the table was covered like in a blue mat that looked like water.
Yeah.
And they had these big sculpted model islands. Like if you see the people at play 40K or any of those games where they do the really elaborate sets.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they had done for this. Mm-hmm. And then moving around it were these little card together ships. And I thought nothing of it because, like I said, at the time I wasn't really into that kind of game. I was very much into just role playing games. So, like, yeah, that's peculiar and moved on. But now it's out of print.
Oh, you're all over. You know, the cool thing, too, is that you're supposed to.
Sounds like a job for eBay.
Yeah. It's like, here, $50. I have all of them now.
Yeah.
But basically, you build up a fleet and it's 40 points and all the ships have different values. I've seen ones that are as low as 2 points and they're literally cursed ships that are falling apart. Like I have one that you fire a cannon. And if you roll a one, you blow your own mast off. Because the cannon explodes, and it's a cursed ship, but it's only 2 points. I have one that's a 39-point ship, and it has 10 masts on it and all these special powers, but it's all your eggs in one basket. And you can even buy sea monsters. Like, they have krakens and titanic crabs and sea dragons and things like that. Like, I have a sea dragon. And they all work together. And the krakens are really cool. Like, when you shoot it with your cannons, instead, it doesn't have masts, obviously, but it has tentacles. Mm-hmm. And you pull tentacles off of it as you damage it. It's hilarious.
Here's something I need to do at Fear the Con, if anyone's bringing the game. And I know somebody is.
Oh, I'll bring it.
Well, not this game, a different game. I know somebody's bringing it because we have a tournament for it. But I want to try out Monsterpocalypse.
Yes.
I have liked that game since I saw it at Gamma this past year. And I would love to pick it up. And I know some places now where I can actually pick out the monsters I want. I don't have to do the collectible crap. I can just pay my money and get the monster I want. So if it pans out as being that good, I'd love to pick that game up, but I've never actually played it. I've watched parts of games, but I've never seen it all the way through. So I think at Fear the Con this year, somebody's got that game.
So speaking of Fear the Con, we have tons of games set up. We're looking for players. Sign up on the fearthecon.com. Anyway, we're trying something new this year. We're doing seminars. So in the middle of slot 5, which is the middle slot on Saturday, we're doing a Fear the Boot Live, which is similar to what we did at Gen Con. And then for the second half, we have 2 seminars on how to make characters using magic cards and how to upgrade your D&D game up to 4th edition. Neither one of these are going to be run by us. These are people who volunteered to come in, and so it's going to be a fresh perspective. It's going to be really cool. And we also have a singing stand-up comedian named Mikey. What's his name?
Mikey Mason.
Mikey Mason. And you can check. I think it's MikeyMason.com. He has a website. I'm sure you can do a Google search for it. Dan will put a link in the show notes. And there's some Google videos of him up, and or YouTube videos of him up. And he's pretty funny. I'm really excited to have him. That's what I'm going to do in slot 5 is check him out. We also have a Magic the Gathering tournament. Draft tournament. And also, I was talking to
Cthulhu
Casey.
Tech demos. And
well, I was talking to Casey, the guy who's running the Magic the Gathering tournament, and he was saying that this is going to be a very casual tournament, and if you're not 100% familiar with Magic, they're not exactly going to be giving lessons, but, you know, people will be there to help. And
but also being a draft game, you can't come in with your
$10,000 deck and so lay waste to everyone. Yeah, so if you're interested in Magic but you're not a hardcore player, don't worry about it. If you are a hardcore player, come anyway. It's a draft tournament, so you know what that's all about. We're having a War Machine Horde. We're having Beer Machine, which is our War Machine Horde tournament. And we should be doing as Dan mentioned, a Monsterocalypse tournament. I still need to nail that one down and finalize it.
Or Monpoc for sure.
Monpoc, yes. And we're also going to be doing Cthulhu Tech demos throughout the whole con. And what else? There's just tons and tons and tons of stuff and some really, really fantastic games. John's going to be running Earthshaker, the Earthshaker scenario.
I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to plan everything.
There's also D&D role-playing game for noobs. There's a couple of games in there that are, if you're unfamiliar with games or you're the girlfriend of somebody who's coming to Fear the Con and they dragged you along with them, it's John and Chris are running these, and they are basically gaming for newbies. And they're going to be sort of introducing games, very rules light, very, you know, holding your hand, how to role play. March 6th and 7th.
Let's talk about something that has some relevance to con games, though perhaps for a slightly different reason than you would normally worry about this. Let's talk about game pacing. So, okay, you've got your plot, you're GMing a game. You've got your plot in front of you or in your head or wherever it may be for you.
Or on the ground or stuck under your shoe.
And you want to make sure that your people get a good run out of this. You don't want to spend too long in one spot. You don't want them to just rush through the whole campaign in 20 minutes. You want to make sure you get in a good amount in each sitting. What are the tips and tricks that you have for helping someone pace that game right? First thing I would put out, and this is not always possible, particularly if you talk about a con game, because a con game is a great example of this, because now you only have one session, but you've got a time slot that you're expected to mostly fill, because if you don't wrap the plot up, you know, you leave your people blue balling. Mm-hmm. But if you go too fast, then these people have got 3 hours before their next game and nothing to do. And, you know, they really didn't get their time's worth, or if you're at Gen Con, you may not have gotten your money's worth out of playing the game.
Yeah.
But you can't do it in those kinds of games. But the first trick I would give for a gaming group is know your players. pay attention to where they spend a lot of time and things they rush through, and that will generally put you on the right path. Also look at how they game. For example, one of the things I didn't expect in our current game is the amount of unscripted role-playing that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really happened too much in our prior games.
Well, as people are start frothing at the mouth here, what exactly do you mean by unscripted?
Well, what I mean is that the characters are just having conversations amongst themselves that have nothing to do with the plot at hand.
Right.
And sometimes these conversations and actions and endeavors can go on for 2-3 hours of the game, and it has nothing to do with the bad guys and plots and whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you've got it pretty easy in our game right now, Dan. You could come and you can just like throw a piece of scrap in the middle of the table, and that could be it. That's all the planning you'd have to do with us, because we'll argue for 3 hours about buying sausage.
Yeah, argue and debate and plan and overplan and replan. And
although I will say this, one of the funnest things I think I've ever done in role playing was actually keeping somebody out of a room by running back and forth to two doors into the same room and just holding the deadlock to keep them from being able to turn the key and open and get in the room. That was original. I've never had that happen before, and that was so fun.
I think one of the important things with pacing is, you really hit on the head, is you have to know your players, and not just in a general sort of sense of, yeah, these guys like a longer game, these guys really like cliffhangers, even though they bitch about them, or these people, they don't want cliffhangers. They hate them. They want, you know, they want a nice wrapped package at the end of each session. You have to specifically know that you have to like look at your players. If they're kind of getting bored, or you've kind of gone too long, or their attention drifts. I mean, no matter how focused a person is, games usually go on for more than an hour, more than 2 hours, more than 3 or 4 hours. And very few people can hold that attention for that long. And you might get one or two people who drift off, the spotlight's not on them, and they're kind of flipping through books and staring off in space or playing with their phones or whatever. But when the entire group starts, like you're laying out good stuff, and the group is kind of like phasing out a little bit, well, then maybe you know that it's okay, we can kind of start to wrap this up for tonight. You shouldn't take it personally. It's not them being jerks, and it's not your story getting going bad. The average human can only pay attention to so much for so long, especially if you're doing a lot of like intense stuff, intense role playing or intense combat or intense scenes and whatnot. You know, the players can only take so much of that before they get burnt out.
I think that the combat aspect of it, though, can actually bring the whole group back together. Like what you were just saying, I would also say, you know, whenever you have certain players that are zoning out, maybe then, especially if this is earlier on in the session, maybe that can be a clue to you that, oh, possibly it's time for a random encounter that will lead us into a small skirmish of sorts. Because I've always found in my groups that nothing will bring people back to on task than getting into a combat, because all of a sudden they're all paying attention. And even though it does sort of go around the table, it will be, I'm paying attention because I have to plan out what I'm going to do next.
It's a golden rule. When you don't know what to do or the players aren't paying attention, blow something up.
True.
Don't even plan for it. It's not even part of your notes or your story. Blow something up and figure out why it blew up later. Their players will fill in the rest.
I would wager with most people, the concern is not speeding up the game. Maybe it is if people are getting bored. You know, maybe you want to set things up a little bit. But I would wager with most people, when they're worried about pacing, they're probably worried about the players moving through things too quickly.
Yeah. Blowing through all your material.
They're not paying attention to things you thought they'd pay attention to. They come up with solutions you didn't come up with that solve the problem too quickly. One of the things that I personally would not recommend, and Chad, I may disagree on this, because I personally find it annoying, is obfuscation. You're supposed to recover something. It's there. They got there too quickly. So you're just going to have it. You're just going to frustrate them. It's just not there, or it's locked and you don't have the key and now you have to go find the key.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think that there's a game mastering trick of they're going to point A and they don't know what's at point A. And then you do a little hand waving or behind the scenes where it's like, okay, they got to point A too fast. The MacGuffin was supposed to be at point A. They didn't know the MacGuffin was supposed to be at point A. I'm going to move the MacGuffin to point B to add in a little bit more material. That's totally fine. That's storytelling right there. Now, when you say you give them the treasure map and there's X marks the spot, and they've done all this work to say, we're going to point A because point A has the MacGuffin. Let's go. And then they get there and there's nothing because you kind of want to fluff the plot out a little bit. Oh, no, that's bad storytelling. I'm not saying that you should just hand it to them on a silver platter, but yeah, you're kind of stringing them out.
Good example of this in a completely different medium is the quest story. And by that specifically, what I mean is TV shows where the object of the TV show is to find the missing mom, to get back home. It's to locate some singular thing. And that's not the object of a particular episode. It's the object of the entire series. Now, you could tell a story like that for a while. If you're really good at it, you could maybe even tell it for a good while. But there comes a point where eventually that moves from interesting to frustrating, to annoying, to repetitive, because you know every time they get close to whatever, it's just going to have to be moved away.
Yeah. And there's a show in the 90s, maybe it was the late 80s, about this kid whose dad was a spy, and he didn't know his dad was a spy, and he was a genius, and his dad got kidnapped. And the whole point of the show was the kid was looking for his dad. Show after show after show after show, he's looking for his dad, he's looking for his dad, he can't find his dad, he's right there, he's right there, he's right there. And it was fun. I don't even remember what the show was called, but I remember I enjoyed it immensely, and then it just got to a point to where, okay, let's is he ever going to get his dad? Who cares?
Yep.
I'm burnt out.
Star Trek Voyager is another classic example of that. I mean, you know, the singular point. I agree with you. I think it's dangerous to do that kind of a arc. You know, it doesn't allow for as much originality in other plots like that you can have. And same thing can hold with gaming. So yes, I think from what I'm getting from you guys is the moral to this story is don't lay out the treasure map directing you, straight to point A. Leave yourself a little bit of leeway room so that if it does go a little bit too quickly, you can be quick on your feet and modify.
And I think that makes a lot of sense anyway, because you don't want to lay everything out in front of the players immediately and then send them on a chase of breadcrumbs. You want them to, it's a fine balance. You want them to figure things out, but you want them, on the other hand, you want them to figure out the things that you want them to figure out.
Right.
But you don't want to tell them what it is. But on the other hand, they're not psychic. And
I think something else you can also do that's going to help you deal with that frustration is overplan just a little bit. Because once again, I there might be some people where they're worried about their players moving too slow. But if the character, if the players are having fun, why worry about it?
Right.
You know, they're getting their time's worth out of the 4 hours or 6 hours or 8 hours, however long your group games. Don't worry about it. And if they're bored, there's tons of things you can do to spice up the game.
What about
that's a different
on the other hand of that coin there, or the other side of that coin, is, you know, you're running the game and it isn't going quite what you want to do, but you're still on task, but the players are having fun. They're maybe not following your breadcrumbs, so to speak.
I'd say run with that, because
you're bored.
Oh.
The game master, you're sitting there and it's like, okay, everybody's having fun, but they're not doing what I want to do.
It really entirely depends on the person. I would say that personally, that wouldn't bother me.
Yeah.
Because the pleasure that I get out of GMing is giving people a story and watching the enjoyment they receive from that.
Right.
So I don't think if the players, me personally, and that's sure one's different, me personally, if my players are into it and having a blast, that negates my possibility of being bored, because I am getting what I wanted out of that experience.
But what if a person isn't like you?
Well, and I
agree too. I mean, as long as my players are jumping through hoops and having fun and role playing and stuff, if I get bored, I'll throw out NPCs who will start interfacing.
You don't have any emergency on your hands, because if the players are having fun, the game's going to survive. So what I'd say is, you know what? At the end of that session, for next week, do two things. One is figure out why they held up so long in that plot. What was they doing for so long that was boring you? And figure out how you can reduce that from future games in your writing or your work. And then also, as we always say, talk to them. Say, you know, guys, you were doing too much whatever, and I wrote the story, and I don't want you to stop doing what you're doing, but I'd like to see you get a little more into the story that I wrote, and, you know, see if they respond to that or not.
Yeah.
But getting back to what I was saying, the thing I would recommend for most situations like this assuming you're probably worried about the moving too fast, is overplan. Because the real situation you're trying to avoid here is probably not your players moving too fast through the plot. It's your players moving too fast through the plot and leaving you with nothing to tell them. And so you've got a 4-hour sitting and they've gotten through the plot in an hour and a half. And so you're kind of, you're working to fill 2.5 hours or face the embarrassment of admitting you weren't prepared. So what I'd say is overwrite. You know, if you've got good experience as a GM with a particular group, you probably have a pretty good feel for what they're going to work through, how fast, and they'll surprise you sometimes, but you can probably get close. So write too much, write 125%, write 150%, write 200%. And whatever's left over, you can just save as a springboard for your next session anyway. Mm-hmm. Just readapt those notes, change them up based on the actions they took, and you've not wasted any work anyway.
What do you do when your pacing is fine, so to speak? You know, the game's moving, you're moving the game in what you can do as a game master along just fine, and your players are just stalling out. They're maybe over planning or they're bickering. It isn't one specific problem. It's just like, okay, guys, the story's over there. You need to go over there. But you don't want to just break out and say that literally, guys, the story's over there. Go to this next town.
Well, let me make sure I understand the question. Are they bored or are they just bogging down? Because that's two different, completely different issues. Let's go with bogging down, because bored's probably a whole show unto itself.
Right.
So let's say they're bogging down. They're planning too much. They're doing something too much on the side. They're not getting into the story.
They're playing with equipment too much. They're trying to pick out spells. They're talking to people who are completely irrelevant, and you're kind of getting the point that they know they're irrelevant, but they just want to interact more.
You ever had anyone you won't play a multiplayer video game with because of that? I tried to play through Baldur's Gate with Tim.
Spin the wheel!
That was Age of Wonder, but yeah, absolutely on Age of Wonder.
Tim, spin the wheel!
There are two people. I cannot play games with them. Mike is one. God love him. But like, if we play Civ every round, he will recheck and requeue every city. Well, my turns take 30 seconds. Move this guy, done.
Mike micromanages. Tim fitzes.
Well, in Baldur's Gate, I can't tell you how many times we'd get through a fight or we'd be trying to do a plot point. And if anyone ever played Baldur's Gate multiplayer, it's a blast. More games should have the main campaign be multiplayer accessible. Mm. And Baldur's Gate did. My hat's off to him. I wish more people would do it. But I can't tell you, because he had a party of six, he had the classic gold box party. And so we had it divided. We balanced the party out that we had a healer and a mage and two fighters. I don't remember what all, but he wanted to play the rogue, which is fine, except you get tons of different kinds of arrows in that game. You get regular arrows, magic arrows, poison arrows, fire arrows, vibrating, whirling arrows. I don't even know what. And I can't tell you between how many fights he'd just be sitting there organizing his arrows. And I'm sitting there at the edge of the screen trying to zone out, but I can't because he's not over there, as I would sit there for 15 minutes while he organized his damned arrows.
What were we talking about again?
People do it in role-playing games.
Oh, okay.
But when people do that in role-playing games, I would remind you that, or remind the undefined you, which I wish English had a word for, but it doesn't. We need a singular you, a plural you, and an undefined you.
Why did you bring this up? The grammar Nazis are going to descend on the forums.
Hey, at least they're talking.
It's going to be 50 pages of whack, 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 whack.
Yeah, this is a whole archetype in and of its own.
Yeah. This D&D needs that. D&D needs the grammar Nazi.
Did you say archetype?
I did.
I caught it. But anyway, so now, people that stall out the role-playing game. So the thing I would remind you is that you control as a game master everything in the world. If they are stalling out, and this comes back to what I was talking about as last episode of the episode before, with game master contingency plans. I'm a big believer in the plug-and-play plot. But the way I write my plots, there might be an overarching storyline. If this is generally what I want to talk about, there is an evil wizard who's going to destroy the village. But within the individual games, what's unfolding oftentimes are just these little segments or episodes that are designed so I can rearrange them however. So if a guy goes here and then they go over here instead of where I intended, no problem. I'll just rearrange like this. They'll just run into that and boom, we're all set to go. But one of the things that I've done for some games is I will keep a cheat sheet of plot hurriers that if they start to get bored, or if things are slowing down, or if the main plot's not nearly as interesting as I thought it was, here's half a dozen little side plots that I can pull out at any moment to get them back entertained again or get them moving again. So if you guys are sitting around, let's move away from D&D. Let's use a Star Trek game. You're all sitting on the bridge of your ship, endlessly kicking around vacuous social themes, which is, you know, great Star Trek fare. But I'm getting tired of that and want to move you on. And so I pull out my half sheet. It's like, okay, what I got here? Well, a Romulan ship could show up, and here's the stats for that. Or there can be this emergency lower on the ship. And maybe even here's a few hints about how to avoid it being a total subplot. Here's how it could be related to the main plot. The big enemy you're fighting actually has a saboteur on your ship. And so we can throw in some hints about that. And
so basically what you're saying is have something blow up.
Yeah, honestly, or another
or metaphorically have or something blow up.
Along those same lines, once again, you as the game master control everything. You should never be powerless in your game. You might be powerless socially amongst the players, but you're never powerless in the game.
That's the bonus of being the game master. Real life, you're the 98-pound weakling. In the game, you're God.
But have an NPC come along. There is always an NPC who can come along.
Who can blow up.
That would be funny. But even if the guy doesn't walk up and spontaneously combust, leaving just smoking shoes on the ground, which would probably get them book stored on that for another 3 hours, trying to figure out why this guy blew up. So don't do that. But he could come along
with our group
and remind them, you know, hey, you're supposed to be saving the village. Have some guy who is a farmer from the village come along and say, oh, I'm worried if you guys don't save us and I hope you're hurrying because I'm fleeing to this neighboring town because I don't believe you're going to do it, or who knows what. I don't know what would motivate your players, but everything in the world's yours. I mean, you should never be powerless to what your players are doing.
You know, and I, as you've been talking about these things, I think I can think of a couple of those instances that you've actually used with us in the last few sessions, because I think we had a problem in the game that you're running right now in the first couple of sessions. And I think it maybe was just new to the world and trying to gel as a new party and with new characters. I think we're getting a little bit better, but I know that we had I guess it was just our first session. It seemed like we just kibitzed and hemmed and hawed over what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. It was the overplanning. Well, it was because we were just so concerned about doing it correctly, and not so much you. No, I mean, your character is very clear cut in what you're going to do. It's my character and Dave's character. And primarily mine, maybe even, but trying to worry about how are we going to do this without, you know, screwing it up for everybody.
Yeah, my
involved.
Character knows what he's going to do because he's a bastard.
Sure.
I mean, and I'm literally playing a guy who is not a nice guy. Mm-hmm. And through the course of the game, I am going to see if I can redeem him and turn him into a nice guy. I don't know if it'll happen or not. We'll see.
And see,
he's not doing very good right now.
And yeah, well, my character's sort of going the opposite way. I'm being more of the naive, I think. I'm learning what the harsh world is really like.
And it's
kind of
scary.
Learning quickly, yeah.
We don't, I
it's
think neat. So. Some of the concern that I had there, because using my own statements in this episode, wasn't a bad thing. You guys are role-playing, you're having fun, you're being successfully entertained. Win. I think the thing that kind of worries me is that, and this is purely a petty
when
ego
we'll
thing,
see through the sham of your game mastering.
Bingo. Is the thing that I pride myself on as a game master is my ability to weave plot. And so I would hate for this campaign to end with the sense being that really I never had a campaign.
Yeah.
You guys were just there and filled on your own with role playing, and I brought nothing to this game as game master.
No, I don't think that at all, because I know that what we've got going on in this group in this campaign, there is a lot of things going on that are so far above what we are doing. There are so many political things,
but
this, that, and the
be
other.
The ultimate game mastering, not necessarily in this game, but just in general, the ultimate game master right there is the ones where the players don't really acknowledge that the game master did anything. They don't say it was a bad game or anything negative, but they're just like, oh, we did this and we did this and we came to... It's like special effects.
Maybe.
I remember when I watched Forrest Gump. Now, you don't think of Forrest Gump as a special effects heavy movie, but actually it is.
Yeah.
And that's how the special effects see, like Lieutenant Dan and his legs.
He actually has
there.
Legs.
He actually has legs. And that was real. And they don't shove it in your face. And you watch the movie, you don't think, wow, like you watch a Star Wars movie where you're like, wow, that's great special effects. You watch the movie and you don't think special effects at all. and it should win an Academy Award for special effects. I don't know if it did or not, but that to me is where the special effects succeed. And I'm not saying the Star Wars special effects fail in this metaphor, but it's just different. I think it's a little bit better.
I don't know. I would say maybe yes, maybe no.
Or do you want the accolades of your people?
Well, it's partially that, but it's also just because, to me, Game Master is one part storyteller.
Sure.
And so if there's no story the players notice in the experience...
Well, I'm not saying they don't notice a story, but they think... They did the story. It was all, we went on this adventure and maybe. We did all this great
stuff
and we saw all these great things.
If they don't have that feeling, yeah. I failed.
Certainly.
Because if they have the feeling that I just spoon-fed and forced everything they did, then I would say...
What did we
do?
Well, I remember having fun, but God, we really never left your farm and we kind of fed some chickens and, you know... We really didn't do anything, but it was a lot of fun.
No,
I don't think you really want that reaction.
I would say,
you're playing the farming chicken game.
I would say, as I sit here and think about it, if you have a pacing problem in your game, probably there are two most likely causes. One, you have either under or overestimated your players.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see the plot, they don't understand the plot, or they understand it better than you do, which is why they're burning through it.
That's my problem. It's the opposite of they understand it better than you. It's like they don't understand it good enough
right.
when I run a game. And I am so, I hate feeding my players. I want them to figure it out. And it's this eternal balance between I want them to figure it out and they're not psychic.
Right.
You know, I think personally, that's my biggest struggle as a game master.
We probably hope so on that. Plot reveals.
Let's do a whole episode on that because, gee, I really need some help in that area.
In the game that you ran, I feel that we did have that problem. And what we ran up against was just the frustration of not being able to further ourselves down the plot line.
Mm-hmm.
And some people were more upset about it than others.
Yes.
I was having a good time.
I was having a good time.
But it can get very frustrating, I guess. But.
I think that one of the ways around that, just to give a little sidebar advice on that, is the post-game conversation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that the game is over and I'm sitting there like, how'd it go, guys? It was great. And then you're like, well, what the hell is going on?
I think part of it there is we don't hang around after games as long as we used to. We used to game,
mm-hmm.
and then we'd go out to Eat Right, which is a local diner here,
yeah.
and we'd hang out for several more hours. And over time, the things that people aren't quite comfortable about saying or feel a little too put on the spot, or they don't know exactly how to phrase it.
Everybody loosens up.
Yeah, everyone kind of loosens up.
Well, the problem is that we game for 12 hours, and then we go hang out in a diner for 3 hours, and then we drive around for 2 hours.
Yeah, I know.
It's like 4 days later, we'd be like, maybe we should sleep.
Well, you know, but even our problem, though, is that we game Sunday nights. If we gamed Saturday night, I think we could have more of that because it'd be like, well, I don't have to get home as early as I have to because I have to get up for work in the morning kind of a thing.
The other thing I would say, if it's not you're over underestimating their abilities, it's you have completely misjudged the character motivations or maybe the player motivations. Like, for example, you wrote this town's under attack and you wrote a lot of detail about the human drama there. But your players are a bunch of plot-driven, uncaring bastards. And as a result, they're going to get to this town, and they are not going to give two craps about the human drama. Who did it, and where do we go to beat his ass?
Yeah.
That's all they're going to want to know.
Or the opposite problem is that you have the town attacked, and you have all this human drama, and the players get there, and everybody in town is dead. It's like... Okay, where's the human drama? Well, the human drama is dead.
And so
they never get it.
Knowing up front the mental and literary capacity of your players and knowing what is going to motivate them in the game, go back to that group template from episode 1 or 2 or whatever it was, these are great ways to head off most of these issues. The other good news is that these issues don't need to go on any longer than one game, because if they occur in a game, what you as a game master have to do is, you know, you do what you always done, you'll get what you always got. So don't just bash yourself at it again the next game and pack in more stuff that they're not going to use. Think about it. Why didn't they do this? Why did they blow over this? You don't know, ask them. Hey, you know, I wrote this human drama. Why did you guys not care? Well, because I just want to beat somebody's ass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, apparently I need to focus a lot more on ass beating than human drama.
Yeah.
Which is fine if that's what your group wants. And so...
And then we can actually, you know, focus on ass beating and kind of slowly start ramping up human drama back into it if that's what the Game Master wants.
We go back and readjust. I mean,
yeah.
The only people I know that have just struggled with this game after game after game after game are people that can't even... somewhat objectively examine themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They can't take a step back and say, okay, what's really going on here? What can I do to address the situation? They just go home frustrated, rewrite their notes, come back, and it happens all over again.
The best games that I have ever run are the ones where I get literally constant feedback, where I get emails and forum posts and people talking to me in person and long phone calls. And I don't mean to make this sound like work, where it's like, okay, you have to write up a 10-page report on what you think of my game.
It's not work, it's enthusiasm.
Yeah, and where people, I mean, they come back and this is what we talk about. You know, this is sky's blue and the weather's fine and the wife and kid are good and this is what the game we're playing. This is what I think of the game last week. And like I said, the best games I've ever ran are the ones where I get constant feedback from people where they're always telling me, it's like, I like this, I like this, I like this, I didn't like this, I didn't like this, I didn't like this, what's going on? Or they're another real great one that all game masters should do and really keep an ear out for is the theorizing. You go out to dinner in the middle of the week with all your friends and they're talking about the game and then they start doing, well, I think this and I think this and I think this, and then you can take that and say, well, okay, plot point A, they figured out, and it's a little too obvious, so I'm going to change it up. They haven't figured out plot point B, so maybe I need to bring that more to the front. And plot point C, they're really loving, so let's just keep going with that.
Okay, I'm going to run with that. How often do you guys, as GMs, listen to that kind of theory machine from your players and actually modify what you have planned? Because maybe, oh, wow, you know what? I like what they came up with. It's
constant.
A little bit cooler than what I have.
Constant.
Or do you just not?
I wouldn't say. I'll point out the ad nauseum seasons game that I always talk about, where I was sitting around and I was about to do the huge plot reveal. And they were sitting around before the game started of they figured it out.
Uh-huh.
I didn't tell them, but they put A, B, C together and they came up with the reveal, and they were like, oh, blah 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 blah, oh, he's probably gonna do this with it, oh, that's so lame, ha ha ha. And I'm like, oh, ha ha ha, but inside I was like, oh my god,
you know.
I changed the whole scope of the game in that one moment.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't say never, but I don't do it often. Because usually what I find from listening to those conversations is...
Well, your plots are too complex. We can't... I hate to say, I mean, they've gotten better. But, like, from our high school games, you lost track of what was going on. But and obviously, it's not like that anymore, but...
What I more do with that is I find this is a great way of taking temperature on the group. That what they're talking about, what they're saying, what they're theorizing is a great way to tell, are they interested? Are they frustrated? Are they completely lost? Are they so far off the mark? And this tells me, okay, this is boring. This figures right in what we're talking about. Because this is a great way, overhearing their conversations is a great way of saying, okay, this is where I need to put a little more emphasis. This is what we need to back off from. I can't expect them to spend a lot of time here because they're getting annoyed with this particular NPC. But also, if I notice that, hey, they're getting frustrated because they are just so lost, then okay, I need to drop a few more clues and kind of give them a better sense of what's going on. You'll see how they're reacting to what it is I'm doing. It's a wonderful thing about role-playing games. If tomorrow I go out and make a movie or write a book or whatever, I have to try and guess how you're going to be feeling and reacting the entire way through. With a role-playing game, I can change it on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
If the audience is booing or falling asleep, I can completely change this movie at the 45-minute mark. Boy, don't I wish George Lucas had done that.
Oh, boy, and I talk about getting onto an hour-long show there. I think a group, to get to that point, it might take a little bit of work because I've actually been in groups before where we would purposely do our theory away from the GM because we didn't want to give him any ideas. And that, I don't mean saying that in a bad way. It's just like we would think, well, if we do this theorizing because we really think we have some things figured out, or we would talk about our strategies and this is how we're going to go against it.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
We don't want to talk about this in front of Dan because he's just going to screw us.
The GM's unfair and takes advantage of us. Yeah, so if you say, we finally figured out the puzzle, even if you're right, he's just going to change the answer.
Yeah.
And I've had game masters like that.
Well, I was saying that sometimes it has been bad, but in other situations, it's just like, well, for whatever conspiratorial reasoning, you think you just don't want to do it. Not that we think that the GM's going to take it and screw us with it. It's just, you kind of think, well, we really don't want to discuss this in front of him. Cause that sort of a thing. So, but yeah, I think it is. When you can all sit down as a group and do that, I think it's greatly beneficial.
So Pat, let me ask you something. Let me put out a challenge here. You've never GM'd before, right?
I have GM'd actually. Yes.
Oh, you have.
If you would listen to, there was an episode where I actually did my GMing profile. Yeah.
I thought you were the guy who said you never GM'd.
I think he said he GM'd one game.
I'm the one getting old, guys, and I still remember that I did that.
There's so many of you. Current and past hosts, I can't keep you.
I really want to do after our current Skies of Glass game is I really, really want to do a pass the buck game.
I've got a great idea. Let me tell you my idea here on the air because I think some other people might get a kick out of this. The story I want to do
without pants.
Yes,
fantastic. We already podcast without pants.
That's what I'm saying.
Podcast without. I would love to do. A pass the stick sort of game. Okay, so that'd be a great idea. I'm totally on board with that. Like a Tour de Realms or something where you game for a few sessions, I game for a few sessions, whatever.
Right.
But here's another idea I had, and this would be great, not for one shotter, but for a real limited run, maybe like a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen those TV shows? There was an episode of Batman the Animated Series like this, where there was an event that happened, And what you do in the course of the episode is you work through everyone's view of what happened, everyone's perspective. And those perspectives may just be the cameras at a different angle, or it may be a completely different story because all these people disagree on what actually occurred. I would love to do a game like that where you have like a bunch of guys sitting around a campfire and some guys like, I heard, and we have a common theme here, like a legend about a dragon. I heard a legend about a dragon.
And then the mist comes up, and then you go into the legend.
And in my legend, it occurs this way, where the dragon was the evil, and the hero saves everyone. And this one, the dragon's misunderstood, and the heroes are kind of dicks.
That would be a really interesting way to do it, to do the pass the buck game, where you're doing that story, and not like the game master is the guy telling the story. And everybody has the same characters.
It'd be a ton of fun also.
But it'd be limited.
Yeah,
you couldn't do it.
You couldn't do it forever. But you'd have like half a dozen facts that must remain true.
Right.
The core of the story that no game master can change. But you can interpret those however you want. Mm-hmm. And you can tell everyone what their character's kind of like. You can't dictate their actions.
There's a dragon and there's a princess and it's a fantasy. So you can't do motorcycles and orbital bombardments.
And the dragon took the princess. Now, in my story, it's for one reason, and yours for another.
Yeah, and like the things you can change is like, okay, there's a princess in my story. She's the beautiful maiden who's the wilting flower. But in your story, she's a bitch.
And the dragon was doing the town a favor.
Yeah, exactly.
I would love it'd be a great study to see how the individual people would reinterpret and reinvent a story. And I would also set the requirement, at least in our group, that with the characters, you can say, okay, Chad, you're going to be the knight, and this one you're a good hero, and this one you're kind of an ass, but I as a game master cannot dictate your actions. You must be faithful to what I told you, but to avoid this becoming purely a pass-the-stick storytelling experience, you still get to play that character within the confines I set forth.
Yeah, and that was the sort of... the pass the GM thing is that we all created characters. Even the GM created a character, not an NPC, a character.
Well, yeah, you'd have to.
And then I just NPC my character, and then...
Therein comes something you've got to trust your people on. You ever had a GM who, for whatever reason, has a character or a favorite NPC in the storyline, and they give that person entirely too much love, entirely too much focus, entirely too many answers?
I think for the purposes of the pass the thing experiment is that I think we all agreed that your NPC kind of takes a step
back.
Well,
the also great thing is because you reset the game every one or two sittings, depending on the length of each story, you don't have a whole lot to gain by pumping up your character.
There's a great sort of libertine free market sort of thing going on here. Because you could say, well, I'm going to turn my character into the Gandalf character, the all-knowing, all-powerful, all-seeing Marty Stu of the plot, of my plot. But when it gets over to him, I know that he, the other GM,
right,
he can either do the same. He might take a cue off of me, or he might say, okay, that was some BS right there, and I'm going to yeah. smack you down now.
So in this one, you're a gutter sucking punk.
Yeah. And- so let's maybe not do the escalation thing and just kind of run a straight game.
Because it depends on how good a system of humor you have, because yeah. maybe that actually adds something.
Oh, yeah. No, I personally, I think I love competitiveness in games, and I...
Well,
I,
to a point.
To a point. Right. And I think that would be hilarious.
Guess we will go ahead and sign it out here. We'll see if the old man has got his internet fixed. Apparently, he has Quest or something. Apparently, his internet's down. So
yeah,
I just right. picture this Flintstones thing where it's like a dinosaur carving
porn?
TCP packets or something. So, that's more likely.
You know, it happens whenever you get up to that
I will
age.
Give Chris credit, though. As his company dinner, he's the only dirty old man that isn't also creepy. And I don't know how he does it. Maybe next episode we'll ask him what his secret is, but he's a dirty old man.
He doesn't leer at children. I think that helps.
That
and,
could help.
You know, he's not, he's like young and in shape.
Maybe
and
it's also because he can turn it on and off.
Yeah.
Because most dirty old men can't. I don't know. Well, that's something for everyone to think about. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.